This story is in the Bible twice, once in 1 Chronicles 13, and it's also in 2 Samuel chapter 6. We're going to be looking at both of them because they have a little bit different information and gives us more detail. Okay, you know, let me ask you a question as we begin here tonight. Have you ever read a chapter of the Bible and when you got all finished, you couldn't remember what you read? Why does that happen? I've done it. Why does that happen? Because we don't pay attention. Lack of concentration. Now, that is an example of doing right in a wrong way. We did right. It was right to read the Bible. But we did it in a wrong way. We didn't pay attention. We weren't concentrating. And it didn't help us any. All right? So we did right in the wrong way. This evening we're going to see how that David did right in a wrong way. And it ended up costing a man's life. And we're going to learn several ways that we can apply it to our lives. There's lots of things we can learn from this story. And it's one of the most beneficial stories that will help us in our spiritual walk with God if we'll pay attention to the principles in this section. Things that we can learn that can apply to us. It'll be a great help to you. So you focus and take some notes, and I think it can be a great help to you. All right, as we begin here, let's look at chapter 6 of 2 Samuel, and we're going to read the first five verses. 2 Samuel chapter 6. Again, David gathered together all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000, and David arose and went with all the people that were with him from Baal of Judah to bring up from thence the ark of God, whose name is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, that dwelleth between the cherubims. And they set the ark of God on a new cart, and brought it out of the house of Abinadab that was in Gibeah. And Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, drove the cart. And they brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was at Gibeah, accompanying the ark of God. And Ahio went before the ark. And David and all his the house of Israel played before the Lord on all manner of instruments made of fir wood, even on harps and on psalteries and timbrels and cornets and cymbals. All right, now let's just stop there and just look at what he's saying here. First of all, we see here that the first step in what David was doing what was right. He was doing a good thing. David desired to bring the Ark of God to Jerusalem. Now let's stop and think about this. We didn't really deal with this when we were working through this because it came before the life of David. But back in the days of Samuel, back in the days of Eli the priest, the people had gotten away from God, they had done wrong, and they had a battle. And they were fighting against the Philistines. And during the battle against the Philistines defeated Israel, killed a lot of the soldiers, and they took the Ark of God. The Israelites decided, hey, we're losing these battles. Let's take the Ark of God with us to the battlefield, and that will work to help rescue us. We'll be safe then, because we'll have God's Ark there. Now, what was the Ark of God? I guess we need to stop there and talk about that first of all. We talked a little bit about it here. The Ark of God was a piece of furniture that was, I forget exactly the dimensions. It was somewhere about like this and something of sort of that nature. All right. And on top of it, it had two golden cherubims. These were winged angels that were facing inward with their wings over the top plate of the ark. And it was under the wings of the cherubim is where God said he would dwell. So God, during the Old Testament time, when the people were going through the wilderness and then on when they built a temple and moved all this into the temple, God dwelt underneath the wings of the cherubim on the Ark of the Covenant. All right. Now, it doesn't mean that that was the only place God was, but he said that he would be there. That's where they went to commune with God. Now, what happened is they took this, they thought, oh, this thing's like a lucky charm. You know, we're going to take this to the battlefield and certainly we'll win the battle because God's ark is with us. Well, God was not pleased. That's not where the ark belonged. The ark belonged in the tabernacle, not wandering out in the wilderness and going to the battlefield. It's not what God wanted. And when the battle was over, the Israelites were killed. The priests that Hophni and Phinehas, the sons of Eli, that were the priests that were guarding the ark, they were killed and the ark was stolen by the Philistines. And they took it down to their Philistine cities, and they put it in the temple with their gods, their god Dagon. And the next morning when they got up, Dagon had fallen over on his face in front of the altar, or in front of the ark. And they thought, this is a bit strange. So they stood Dagon back up. And the next day they came back, he was falling down again. This time he was broken to pieces. And then God caused them to get a disease that started affecting them. All the people were getting this disease and they started to die. And they said, we better get this ark out of here, man. It's causing us trouble. But maybe it's just our imagination. So they moved it to another city. And the same thing happened over there. All this disease started moving to the other city. And they moved it to another city. And they did it about four or five times. And every time they'd move it, the people of that city would get this disease. And so finally they said, this thing's a curse. Let's get rid of it. You know, the God of Israel's mad at us. We better send it back to Israel. So they made a cart and they put the ark on the cart and sent it. They said, here's how we're going to know whether or not this was really God or whether it's just our imagination. And if you're not a farmer, this doesn't mean much to you, but to a farmer, this is a neat story. They took two cows that just had baby calves. Now, if you get a cow that just had a baby calf, the last thing she wants to do is leave her baby. I mean, she will fight you. Sometimes they get really mean if you go near their baby. All right. So what they did is they took these two cows that just had babies, took the babies away and locked them in the barn and tied these cows to the ark or this cart. And they said, now, if these two cows will leave their babies and go straight to Israel, we'll know that the ark, the cause of the problems was because of the God of Israel and he was mad at us. And it says that the two cows, they took off straight toward Israel, lowing as they went. In other words, they're mooing, crying for their babies, but they went straight toward Israel. And exactly what God told them to do. They left their babies behind and went straight to Israel. And so the Philistines said, whew, glad that's over with, because their God was after us. And so now they can have it back. We don't want that Ark of the Covenant anymore. So when it got to Israel, then they took it, and the people that found it, I think it was in Beth Shemesh, and they said, oh, look at, here comes the Ark of God. Whoa, that's wonderful. So they took the Ark of God, but some of the people made a foolish choice. They said, this is pretty cool. We've never been this close to this ark before. Let's have a look at it. And they went and looked inside of it, and all the ones that looked inside of it died. Because God was showing them, listen, I am holy. You don't mess with my ark. And so they said, whoa, we better be careful here because God's mad at us. So they put it in the house of another man, this man that's watching it, of the Abinadab. They put it in the house of Abinadab. And it stayed there for 20 years. All through the last half of the reign of Saul. 20 years it was there in his house. Now, it had been there since that time, and now David decides he's going to bring it to Jerusalem. Okay, so this is what the whole story. I gave you all that kind of detail because it's important for you to understand what was happening. So David's now going to bring that ark to Jerusalem and put it in a proper tent like it was supposed to be, put it and make a tabernacle for it, put a proper place so that it could be where God wanted it to be so they could worship God the way they were supposed to all those years that they weren't doing that. And so what David does is we see here that he calls together all of Israel and he's meeting with them. Over in Chronicles, we read that he consulted with the captains of thousands and hundreds and with every leader, and David called all the congregation and they discussed this and talked about it. So David's making big plans. All right? He's going to bring this ark back to Jerusalem. And he's called all the people together, he talked to all the leaders, and he's discussing it with them, how we're going to do this, and he invites all of Israel to come. You can read more about that in Chronicles, 1 Chronicles 13:2, how he's invited the whole nation of Israel to come and to be part of this. This is going to be a great time of celebration. And there was nothing wrong with bringing the ark back to Israel. I believe that was a good thing, or back to Jerusalem. That was a good thing to do. David wanted to do the right thing. All right? So he was wanting to do the right thing. Now, he desired to do this to please the Lord. We see that he made great preparations for all this. Down in verse number 5, David and all the house played before the Lord on all manner of instruments. All right? So they're playing musical instruments. We find over in Chronicles that it gives us a little bit more detail about that in verse number 5. It says, and so David gathered all Israel together. And I guess it was in verse number 5. Anyway, we'll get to it in a moment. Verse number 8. And all Israel, and David and all Israel played before God with all their might and sang on, and played harps with psalteries and timbrels and cymbals and trumpets. Alright, so he says that they gathered together, they're making great preparations for this, so David is preparing for this. Now, you think about it with me, alright? The Bible doesn't say this, but it doesn't take too much to figure this out. David's making a cart to bring the Ark of God back to Jerusalem. Now, I doubt that David said, hey, call the stable boy and bring the cart that we, you know, haul the garbage out with and bring it to my palace. I need a cart. I doubt he did that. My guess is he probably made a brand new, beautiful, elaborate, decorated cart for this special occasion. I mean, he went all out. He's the king. And this is a great event. He's preparing he's bringing all Israel in. He's certainly not going to use this old cart that he finds in the back alley. It's going to be a beautiful, nice cart. So he makes his brand new cart and he chooses Uzzah and Ahio to guide the cart. Uzzah and Ahio were the sons of Abinadab, the man who had been watching over the ark for these 20 years. So they seemed to be like logical candidates. They knew all about it. They knew, you know, they'd been around it for all these years. So the perfect opportunity for them to do this. So they're the ones that are guiding the cart. So they got a cow or oxen, a couple of ox. Oxen are usually male cows, not always, but they were the ones that were tied to the cart that were pulling the cart. Okay. So he's got these oxen. They're headed toward Jerusalem. And this is all the preparation. And David then plans to have a great parade. You ever been to a parade? You know what I mean by parade? Where everybody lines up and there's singing and there's rejoicing and all these kind of things. So David's making this great parade. They're leading, you know, as he's leading the way, they're going to bring this Ark of God back to Jerusalem. And it says here that David was singing and playing before the Lord and there was a great celebration. Notice again verse number 5, and it says, and all the house of Israel played before the Lord on all these manners of instruments, and they had a great, the word played there has the idea, I think it talks about it over here in Chronicles. I guess neither one of them actually says it in this spot, but it says it another place. But the idea was they were playing the musical instruments. They were also, it says that they were dancing before the Lord. It tells us that a little bit down further when it actually takes place. They were dancing before the Lord. Now, it's important for us to notice it. Let me just stop and make a note of that. The dancing you read in the Bible, there's two kinds of dancing you find in the Bible. Most of the time, the dancing in the Bible was perfectly good. What it was an excited, whirling, and spinning and just jumping for joy and boy, we're excited. This is wonderful. You'll read about that when they crossed over the Red Sea. Miriam, who is now 80 some years old, she leads the ladies in this dance of rejoicing. They weren't out there doing some kind of a wiggly jiggly thing that was a sensual thing. It wasn't that at all. They were leaping and dancing and spinning and twirling. It was an exciting time. It was time of, you know, it's kind of like when a team wins a game and everybody's jumping and excited and rejoicing. And it's not a evil dance. It was an exciting thing. All right. Then the other kind of dance in the Bible is like when you have Herodias' daughter that was the cause of John the Baptist's death. She was obviously doing a sensual type of a dance because it excited the king in a sensual way. And he said, ooh, this is pretty cool. You can have whatever you want. You know, you really excited me. I'll give you anything you want. She's on my John the Baptist's head. All right. And so that was a bad kind of a dance. Now, most of the dancing today is sinful dance. It arouses the sinful, lustful desires of the flesh. You get two people out there, even if it's the slow dancing type and they're cuddling up to each other. And a lot of times they're not even married. That's not going to be a good situation. Or you get some of the more modern dancing and they're wiggling and dancing and jigging to all the music. That is, again, it's a sensual thing. It is not a good thing. Dancing today, that modern dancing is not something Christians ought to be involved in. It is something that it feeds the flesh. It doesn't feed your spirit. It doesn't make you feel more godly. It doesn't make you feel more holy. It appeals to your flesh, not to your spirit. And so keep that in mind. Now, they played music on harps and psalteries. Now, psalteries were another stringed instrument. There's harps. We know what a harp is. It's a stringed instrument. But psalteries were another type of a stringed instrument. They had lots of different kinds of stringed instruments. Psalteries were one. And then they also played on timbrels, which was a tambourine, and on cymbals. Well, those are the things that you crash together, and trumpets or something they would blow. Now, all of these instruments can be played in a God-honoring way. Right? And it's important for us to understand that it's not, they were doing it in a God-honoring way. Today, however, both the rock music and Christian rock music have a central beat that appeals to the carnal flesh. You know, you hear the ungodly music of our day, and it does not make you just feel like bowing down and worshiping God. It's a rousing thing, and it makes you feel like, you know, it rouses your flesh. Okay? That's bad. Alright? And we need to be aware of that. And that sometimes some of these instruments are used in that kind of music today. Doesn't mean these instruments are always bad. They can be used in a good way if they're used in a careful and a proper way. Now, so we find first of all that David did right, he did the right thing. It was right for him to bring the ark back to Jerusalem. And I don't think God rebuked him in any way for wanting to bring it back. But we find here that David did right in a wrong way. He did it in the wrong way. Now, David did not follow the Bible instructions. Right? God gave some very clear instructions on how to move the ark. David didn't do it that way. There's no record that David prayed before he did all this. You read these accounts, he talked to the people, called in the captains and said, hey, what do you think? And they all discussed it, but no mention of him praying. No mention of him calling the priests and saying, hey, let's get the Urim and the Thummim. That's the things I couldn't remember this morning. Let's get them out and ask God about this. They didn't do that. At least not that we can see. Nothing said about this. And so he's going about it in the wrong way. David put the ark of the on a cart instead of following God's orders. Now, what did God say? God said that the ark of the covenant, if you looked at it from the end, all right, and you got these, well, I'm not good at drawing angels here, but you got the angel up here, and they had a ring in each corner. Right, and they would have a stick going through this ring that would come out here, and a long stick, if you looked at it from the side, right, the ring's on here, and then the sticks would go through it like this, and there'd be one on the other side over here. Right, and so then they'd have four of the Levites would each one carry a stick, and they'd put it on their shoulder, and they were to carry the ark like that. That's how God told them to move it. And the Bible is very clear about that, but David didn't read that. Numbers chapter 7 and verse number 9 tells us that's how they were to carry it. All right, but David didn't do it that way. He put it on the cart. Now, as I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, I wonder if the reason David made a cart for it is because the last time that thing was moved was on a cart. Maybe they were just remembering back 20 years ago, the Philistines moved it on a cart and it worked fine. Hey, let's build a cart for that. I don't know why. You know, who knows? God doesn't tell us, doesn't say. But maybe that's a reason that David chose to put it on a cart. But if that's the reason, well, he was following the ungodly people and the way they did it. Now, sometimes people say, well, why did God get upset with David if he didn't get upset with the Philistines? Philistines moved it on a cart. Why didn't God get mad at them? Because the Philistines were ignorant. David was careless. They were ignorant. David should have known better. He had good reasons to know better. He had the word of God. He could have read the book of all these earlier books of Moses and found out how to move it, but he didn't do that. So the Philistines were ignorant. David was careless. Now, we see also that David, as they were preparing to move this, David had chosen these men to move this ark. Ahio and Uzzah, as far as we know, were not Levites. They were the sons of Abinadab, but not necessarily Levites. But they were kind of the logical candidates from a human perspective. Who else would be better to move it than the guys that have taken care of it all these years? And so, from a human perspective, see, he was acting in a human way. He was doing what seemed to be right humanly, but it wasn't right from God's eyes. All right, now, Uzzah disobeyed God. So they're moving the ark, and they're headed toward Jerusalem. They get partway there, and the oxen that were pulling the cart, they got to go up over a little bit of a hill onto a flat area that was a a threshing floor. Now, a threshing floor was a flat stone or a flattened ground where they would bring all the grain in and then they pound on the grain to get the grain to come out of the stalks. Okay? And when they got near there, it says that the oxen stumbled. So they got near there and the oxen tripped. And when they tripped, it jerked the cart. And Uzzah saw the ark starting to tip off. And Uzzah quick grabbed it to hold it on. As soon as he did, God struck him dead. Why? You know, in our minds, we might think, whoa, what else was he supposed to do? Let it fall on the ground? No, that's the wrong question to ask. The right question to ask is, what should have they done to prevent the accident from happening? That's what they should have been asking. Not, well, why did God get so upset? He was trying to keep the thing from falling. Well, if they hadn't been doing it wrong to begin with, it wouldn't have had a chance of falling. If they would have been carrying it like God said to, never would have happened. And God struck him dead. Now, from a human perspective, it seems like such a little thing. You know, sometimes we look at things and say, but that's just a small little sin. Why would God get so upset about that? Just a little thing. He just touched it. He was trying to do it for a good reason. He was trying to keep the thing from falling over on the ground. That would have been terrible. And we look at it from that perspective, but you know, it shows us here that even little sins are a big deal to a holy God. Even little sins are a big deal to a holy God. And that applies to all of us. Little sins are a big deal to a holy God. We've got a holy God. We need to be careful what we do because it does matter to God. Now, God strikes him dead. God's angry about this. And it did not please the Lord. We see down in verse number 6. And when they came to Nashon's threshing floor, Uzzah put forth his hand to the ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God smote him there that he... for his heir, and he died by the ark of God. And David was displeased because the Lord had made a breach upon Uzzah. And he called the name of the place Perez Uzzah unto this day. And David was afraid of the Lord that day. And he said, how shall the ark of God come to me? So David would not remove the ark of the Lord unto him, into the city of David. But David carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord continued in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his house. Alright, now, here's the situation. Uzzah touches the ark. He's struck dead. David's displeased. David says, I can't believe God did that. I mean, we went to all this work. We built a brand new cart. We're having a great big celebration. We're all out here rejoicing and praising God and worshiping God. And now all he did is reach out and touch the thing and God struck him dead. God, what are you doing? That is not fair, God. You know, sometimes we get feeling like that. You know, God does something and think, that wasn't very fair. That wasn't very just. But whoa, wait a minute. We need to stop and back up as David needed to do. David, what he really needed to do is stop and ask himself, did I do things the way God wanted them done? But at this point, he hadn't had time to do that. And he got upset, so he moves the thing off the road into the house of Obed-Edom. And Obed-Edom takes care of this thing for 3 months, and during that time, God blesses Obed-Edom. So he's got the blessing of God on him. Maybe his crops were abundant. Maybe his wife had a new baby. I don't know what all he did, but he did something that everybody knew Obed-Edom's house was blessed by having that ark in their place. And David finds out about that. Now, let's stop and think about this. There's a lot of principles here that we can pull from this. And I want to go through this without getting dragged down. Now, from this, we learn that David did the right thing in the wrong way, and it angered God. Now, many today think the end justifies the means. What's that mean? What that means is that it doesn't really matter what you do or how you do it, as long as in the end, it's all good. It all ends up for the good thing. And there's a lot of examples of that, and you will be amazed. If you'll learn that, remember that, that is a secular or worldly philosophy. That is not a Bible philosophy. The end does not justify the means. In fact, here's a little phrase that is good for you to remember. It is never right to do wrong to get a chance to do right. It is never right to do wrong to get a chance to do right. And David did right, he did wrong to get a chance to do right. He did the wrong thing in desiring to do what would please God, but it didn't please God. It's never right to do wrong to get a chance to do right. Now let me give you some examples. I've got 4 or 5 examples here that'll help us to be able to understand what we're talking about. The first example is this. Playing contemporary Christian music, or what's commonly called CCM, contemporary Christian music, gets to get people to come to church. You know, a lot of churches, and when I say a lot, I mean a lot of churches today, are now using music to get people into church. They get their band up there, they get, you know, get some guys that can play the drum and their guitars, and they get up there, and they have their contemporary music. And it's basically rock music with a few Jesus words in it, and they bring lots of people in because people are like, oh, I love that, man. That music is cool. Let's go there and kind of dance to the music. And so they get a lot of people to come to church. So that you think, well, they have a right desire. Is it right to get people to come to church? Is it right to get people to come to church? Yeah, it's right to get people to come to church, but it's not right to do it in a wrong way. All right? And God wants us to do it in a right way. Now, those who bring it in that way, God is angered by the playing music that appeals to the sensual flesh. If you get people to come to church just because you're playing music that kind of turns them on and gets them revved up inside and feeling, you know, like going out. And, you know, most of those people, when they go home, what kind of music do they listen to all week long? That kind of music that they hear at those churches is so close to the same rock music that they listen to all week long that they don't see the difference. And one leads to the other. And it's harmful. It is not a good thing to play that kind of music to get people into church. You know, the same thing is being done with children's videos. A lot of the so-called Christian children's videos, the music that is in that is rock music. It's Christian rock, CCM. It is Christian rock music. If you just heard it from a distance or your neighbors heard it from, you know, from their house, it sounds like rock music. Now, it's got some Jesus words in it, but it sounds like rock music. That is using the wrong thing to do the right thing. And that doesn't please God. We need to be very careful about that because it will harm us on the inside if that's the kind of music we listen to, because that kind of music, it appeals to the flesh. Another example. Giving with a bad attitude. All right? Now, when you come to church, it's a good thing, and it's the right thing to give tithes and offerings to God. No question about that. We take up the offering on Sunday morning. The good thing is to give to God. But if we give to God with a bad attitude, say, oh, I do them like, oh, why do they always got to take an offering? You know, I always feel like I got to put something in. I don't want to put anything in. I got plans for my money this week. I was going to buy a new toy, and I don't want to put money in the offering there. And so, I better do it, because if I don't, you know, they're going to think I'm a pagan. So, you know, that kind of an attitude, what happens? God says, I'm not impressed. See, God sees our heart. God doesn't just see what we do, but God sees our hearts. And that displeases God. Another example is serving the Lord without preparation. All right, when we serve the Lord without preparation. All right, now what I mean by that is, when we have a job to do, maybe a ministry, and we don't prepare for it, and we just come along, try to limp along and do the best we can without preparing. I mean, that'd be like me coming to church and say, well, I didn't have time to study this week, folks, but I'll give it my best. We'll see what we can do here. And then we'll just kind of, yeah, that's not right. That doesn't please God. It's doing the right thing, but in the wrong way. So we need to prepare and be appropriate in these things. Now, another one is evangelizing with compromisers. Like, for example, you've all heard of Billy Graham. All right, Billy Graham is an evangelist. Well, is he still alive? Yeah, he must be ancient. All right, he's really, really old. All right, so Billy Graham was a compromising evangelist. He used to be an independent Baptist when he was young, and then he got into the wrong crowd and started preaching with people that were compromisers. And there's been many times when he would have even Catholics on the platform with him, and he'd call up his brother Catholic priest to pray in the service and stuff like that. and he was doing the right thing, but in the wrong way. You don't hold hands with compromisers when you're doing this kind of thing. That does not please the Lord. And it's wrong to work with those who are not obeying the Bible. You know, even for us, be careful. If there's people that are not obeying the Bible, we shouldn't be working with them, because it is compromising our stand and doing what it's doing the right thing in the wrong way, and it displeases the Lord. Now, another example is something that we've all done, maybe even tonight: singing and praying without concentrating. Sometimes we sing a song, oh yeah, I know that song, and we just put it in neutral and we sing the song, and when we're all done, you say, what song did we sing? I don't know, I don't remember. All right. We don't even pay any attention, and we just kind of float along with it. And so we're singing and praying without paying any attention, and we need to be very careful about that. It's right to pray, and it's right to sing, but it offends God if we do it without concentration. We're not really worshiping God. We need to concentrate. So we are in danger of God's judgment if we do the right thing in the wrong way. Now, let's move on. David finally did the right thing in the right way, and that's the exciting end of the story, verses 12 through the end of the chapter. David prepared properly to move the ark. And you can get more details if you go over to 1 Chronicles chapter 15. It gives you more details of what all took place. But we don't have the time to look over there right now. But you can check over there later. But David followed the Bible instructions to move. He got a hold of the Bible and read about how the priests were supposed, or the Levites were supposed to carry it. So in verse number 17 it says, and they brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place in the midst of the tabernacle. Oh, I got ahead of myself here. Let me see. Verse number 12. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom. And it was told David that the Lord had blessed Obed-Edom and he all that pertaineth unto him, and because the ark of God was with him. So David went and brought the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom into the city of David with gladness. And it was so that when they bare the ark, they had gone six paces. They sacrificed his oxen and fatling, and David danced before the Lord with all his might, and David was girded with a linen ephod. So on. All right, so here's the situation. David finally, he reads up on the Bible. He probably talked to his scholars and says, hey, we got to find out what's the Bible say about moving this thing? Did we do it wrong? And they read in the Old Testament, they find out, oh boy, did we ever do it wrong. God says they're supposed to be carried on the arms or the shoulders of the Levites. So David arranged all that. He contacts the Levites. He gets them all there. And he says, now you need to sanctify yourselves. Sanctify means to make yourself holy, set apart, clean yourself, be right with God. So they all get right with God. And then David admits their failure the first time. They said, hey, we did it wrong the first time, we got to do it right the second time. And then they moved the ark very reverently. And as they were moving the ark, they would stop and they'd sacrifice some animals, and then they move it a little bit further and they stopped and they sacrificed some animals. David was careful this time. He said, we're not going to do it wrong again. We don't want any more people dying. And you can be sure of those Levites. Can you imagine? How would you like to be one of the four Levites that was carrying that ark? I think you'd be kind of carrying a little bit shaky, like, you know, don't let that thing touch me. I got to be careful here because the last guys that got near this thing died. All right. So, but David did it right this time. And it says that he danced before the Lord and they sang. And so they're jumping for joy and twirling around and rejoicing and singing songs and playing all their instruments and sacrificing. So David is making a big parade of this and rejoicing in the Lord. And it also says that David wore a linen ephod. Verse number 14, David danced with all his might, and David girded himself with a linen ephod. Now what that means, it was a white linen clothing that the priest would often wear was not his kingly garment. So he took off his kingly robe, probably took off his crown, set it down, he put on his linen garment like all the common people and like the priests. And he was wearing that as they were going through the parade. And David was just rejoicing in the Lord. He was saying, it's not about me, folks. It's not about me. It's about God. It's about God. And he's rejoicing in what God has done. And so all that's going on. But David's wife, his wife, Michal. Michal was King Saul's daughter. Remember, the first wife that David married. She was not impressed. She had a bad attitude about this. And she says there, in the end, verse number 21, and David, verse number 20, and then David returned to bless his household, and Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How glorious was the king of Israel today, who uncovered himself in the eyes of the handmaids and his servants, as one of the vain fellows shamelessly uncovereth himself." And David said unto Michal, "It was before the Lord, and he which chose me before thy father, and before all his house, to appoint me a ruler over the people of the Lord, and over Israel. Therefore will I play before the Lord. And I will yet be more vile than thus, and will be base in mine own sight. And of the maidservants which thou hast spoken of them shall I be held in honor." And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child unto her death. All right, now, here's the situation. Michal goes, "David, you look so cute out there with all those other people. You took off your kingly gown and pranced around like an ordinary person. Don't you remember you're the king? You should be wearing your king's garments and out there leading the parade with your royal coat on and your crown and being showing off of your greatness." And David said, "I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be vile before the Lord. I'm going to be a common before the Lord, because it's not about me, it's about God. We're moving his ark." And as a result, God never gave Michal any children because she was despising David. And I'm not sure what all of the reason behind all that, but you can see that it was a thing that upset the Lord and upset David as well. Now, as we bring the last thoughts together here, God desires our best. That's something important for us to remember. You know, God deserves and desires our best. Not our second best, not our third best. He desires our best. And we need to treat God with great respect. We ought to obey God's commandments and let the Bible be our constant guide. Obey what God said. Even when you don't understand it, obey the Bible. And because God is a great God, and we ought to sanctify ourselves. That means to make ourselves clean before the Lord and to be pleasing to the Lord and live a life that honors him. And because our lives represent Christ. You know, this is something important. In this world, your neighbors and the people at work and the people at school and the people that you meet in the shops, how are they going to see anything that resembles God? The only way is in your life and in mine. That's the only thing they're going to see. You know, your neighbors are not going to see some vision in the sky of God. They're not going to open their Bible and read the Bible. They're not going to turn on some religious channel and learn about God. They don't want anything to do with that. The only way they're going to see anything about God and about how holy God is and what God is like is in your life and in mine. And the most obvious thing they're going to see is how we dress and how we act. And how we respond to situations. People are watching us all the time. And we need to live our lives in a way that will represent Christ. And we need to be sure that we dress modestly. And don't dress like the modern styles of the world. A lot of the modern styles of the world are ungodly. They're immodest. They draw attention to their self instead of honoring God. And one of the things that I want to challenge you to give some serious thinking to is that we make sure that we try not to dress. We need to try to dress distinctly honoring the gender that God made us. We are in a world today that is sick. That is trying to erase the genders. It is trying to say that there's no difference between male and female. Everybody ought to use the same toilet and everybody ought to act the same way. And everybody, the world is corrupt. And as Christians, we need to say, no, I'm not going to look like the other gender. I'm not going to act like the other gender. I'm going to act and look like my gender because this is what God made me to be. And let's not fall into this trap of this unisex and transgender world that we live in. Let's be different and stand up for the Lord. Dress sharp when we come to church to honor the Lord. Focus on the songs and the sermon. Don't get distracted. Don't talk and walk around and pass out offering and things like that during a prayer time. You know, when someone stops to pray, you ought to freeze. And just right then, bow your head and pray with them. You know, this idea of, you know, digging through the wall, let's find money and let's get our money out, pass it to the kids and some, oh, give me my money too. And I mean, that's not prayer. That's a mockery. And if you come into a service and somebody's praying, stop at the door. Don't keep walking in. And you guys that are ushers, you're pretty good. I've told you about this before, but if somebody comes, you stop them at the door if they don't have the decency to stop. Some people don't know the difference. But you stop them at the door and say, please stand here until pastor's done praying or whoever's praying. And that's the right thing to do. Honor God. And remember who He is. Prepare our heart when you come to church. You know, you get ready to come to church. Spend time with God. Prepare your heart. You know, the last thing you need to do is have a fight with the family on the way to church and then expect you're going to learn from God. It's not going to work very good. Sometimes that happens. That's not the right thing to do. If that happens, the best thing to do is sit in the car and have a good talk and pray about it and get it right with each other and get it right with God before you come into church. But, you know, we need to prepare ourselves and then come early so you can get here and be calm and ready to worship and you can think about what's going on instead of rushing in the last second. Sit down. Yeah, what page was it? Boy, I almost made it. You know, that's not going to help you to worship God. We need to be prepared and ready. All right. So I share all these things because David recognized the right thing to do is to put God first. Honor God. Honor God. And we need to do that ourselves. Now, if you've been doing the right thing in the wrong ways or with the wrong attitudes, we need to ask God to forgive us. That's the right thing to do. You know, you think about there's lots of things in life that maybe we've been doing in the right thing, but in the wrong way. Ask God to forgive you. And if you've been not honoring God, not giving Him the best place in your life, not putting Him first and honoring Him and showing Him respect and honor and worship, we need to do that. And to do that, ask God to help us to do that. And remember that little phrase I gave you. It's never right to do wrong to get a chance to do right.